Hi everybody, it's Gustavo, winemaker at Mira Winery. Welcome to my second webinar, specifically regarding the SIP program. And pretty interesting second day here. We're continuing to have beautiful weather in the Napa Valley. I was in the vineyard this morning looking at this specific block of Pinot Noir, where things look great. I mean, it's hard to complain when you have sunny weather and it's just beautiful outside. But anyway, thanks for joining me. What I'm going to do is I'm going to take you through the process of making this wine, and then we're going to taste it. And if you have any questions along the way, please send them in. And then I'm going to look at my iPhone at the end to have a look at what questions you have, and I'll answer any questions that come up. So I'm happy to be here, happy to taste this. I love talking about wine, and I love talking about what I do and sharing it with people because it's a great thing to do. So anyway, let's start with the vineyards, which are always the fundamental part about the wine. These vineyards are located in the Stanley Ranch, which is a vineyard that's in the Carneros Appellation of the Napa Valley. And that appellation is also in Sonoma, but we only work with fruit, regardless of our wine that we're making, only from the Napa Valley. So it's a relatively fairly sized vineyard as far as Napa Valley goes. And this company, they only sell grapes. So there's a lot of customers out there, pretty famous names that get fruit from them. And this vineyard primarily grows Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. So the Pinot for this was originally planted like in the early 2000s. So by 2016, which is what this vintage is, it was years old. And so really hitting a stride in terms of how good the fruit can be and how well balanced on its own the vines are going to be. So this wine then, it's a 2016 Stanley Ranch Pinot. And for those of you lucky to have it, you can taste along. You'll see on the back label that it's a blend of four clones. And by the way, as part of our SIP program, we're going to do this tasting again in a couple of weeks to give people a chance to get the wine, and then maybe we can have a further discussion at that point. And just to mention what the SIP program is we're looking for a way. Of course, there's a lot of things going on, as we know, with the health issues and whatnot, and we wanted to figure out a way that we could help out our community. There's a lot of restaurants that are closed. There's a lot of waiters that are relying on their tips and whatnot to get through. And we decided that we wanted to put together this SIP Mira While You SIP program. And SIP, funny enough, is the short way, shelter in place, translates into SIP. And so we decided to do the SIP While You SIP, offering three different wines. There's a Chardonnay that I talked about yesterday, this Pinot, and a Cabernet, which represent the lots that we make a little bit more of, about 800 cases available of each, at a pretty substantial discount, up to 40% off, and then turning around and using the proceeds to help people out here in the Napa Valley. So hopefully you can take advantage of that. And then when we get back together in a couple of weeks, we can all have a chance to taste the wine together and maybe have more questions at that time. So anyway, back to the wine. It's as I mentioned, it's from Stanley Ranch. It's 100% Pinot Noir. And that's very important to me. Most of the wines that we make are single varietal, single vineyard, extremely pure. And as I was mentioning before, this particular Pinot is a blend of four clones of Pinot Noir. So the important thing to discuss here is what is a clone? So to put it pretty simply, a clone is basically a variation of the same varietal. So just like we have apples, we have red ones, we have green ones, we have Fuji apples, and things like that. We have the same thing in grapes, and the same thing in varietals. We have some varietals that ripen sooner, some that ripen later, and then within those varietals, we have clones of the same varietal that do the same thing. They ripen sooner, they ripen later. They're more fruity, they're more earthy. They produce bigger grapes, they produce smaller grapes, and things like that. So, making 100% wine in this case, I relied on four different clones to help me, quote unquote, blend, because at the end it is a blend, but it's a blend of four different types of Pinot Noir. So I'm using clones 115, and this probably doesn't mean much to anybody, but a clone 115 is a very earthy clone, very structured clone. Has more earthiness, has more tannin, more astringency to it, basically more robust, while the other three clones tend to be more on the fruit side. So I use primarily the 115 basically to build the structure of the wine, and then I use the other ones kind of to fill in the middle. So if you think about it in terms of a picture, the 115 would be the frame, and then everything else would be what's inside the picture. So the 115 is kind of holding it all together. And then what we do is we harvest everything separately. Of course, being different clones, they don't all ripen at the same time. So there's about a 2-week time frame that everything gets harvested. And most of the time, most years, the Pinot Noir is ready to be harvested right around Labor Day for us here in Carneros. So, you know, around Labor Day here, it gets really hot. Pinot is a very delicate variety, and it doesn't like to withstand too much. You know, it reacts pretty immediately to weather, and pretty immediately to heat or dry weather or wet weather or anything. It starts pretty much suffering right on the spot on the vine. So we really have to be careful in terms of knowing when we're going to harvest the grapes so that we can get in line to get our grapes harvested when we want to. So anyway, we'll harvest these grapes around Labor Day, let's say, bring it into the winery. And at the winery, we'll do, we pick everything at night. Like I mentioned yesterday, everything gets harvested at night to bring everything in as cool as possible. And that's important because in the case of the red wines, we're going to do a cold soak, a cold maceration period where we hold the tank cold before it starts fermenting for at least 4 days. So if we can bring in the fruit already at 50 degrees, which is kind of like what I'm targeting in the cellar, we don't have to use the energy or the time to use the chillers on the tank to bring the contents down to temperature. It kind of is already there, and we can save energy and we can save time by doing so. So we'll bring the fruit in. We'll harvest overnight, bring the fruit in. We'll do a selection here at the winery to pull out anything that maybe made it into the picking bin, such as some of the canes that are out in the vineyards or leaves and stuff. I mean, keep in mind that it's dark out there and it's not always easy to see everything. So some things end up making it into the picking bin. All that out. And then from the sorting table, it goes into a machine that plucks the grapes off the stems. That's simply called a destemmer. And I don't destem all of the Pinot fruit. Some of the fruit goes into the tank with the whole clusters with the stems in place. And I'll explain a little bit about that in a little while. So for the most part, though, we only destem the fruit. We don't crush the fruit. And my goal is to have the fruit as intact going into the tank as possible so that I can kind of work at a slower rate of fermentation with the fruit that I have, because Pinot is a varietal that likes to ferment really, really fast. So it taken, you know, given it its own decision making, the Pinot would ferment in about 24 hours. And that's something we don't want. And I'll explain why in a little bit. So anyway, we harvest everything over a 2-week period, like I mentioned before, and we'll put all the four clones that obviously come in at different times. We'll put them all in different tanks and we'll do different things to the different clones and try to get different characteristics from each of the clones so that when I put everything together just before bottling, I can have more complexity in the wine by doing different things to different parts of the blend. So, like I mentioned, I'll destem most of it. The 115 for sure will get destemmed entirely, go into the tank. Whole berries, anything that's destemmed goes whole berries. And for me, whole berries is important because it allows a slower rate of fermentation, but also there's a chemical reaction that happens inside the grapes. It's an enzymatic fermentation that releases these other aromas into the wine that just gives the wine this bouquet that for me is a hallmark of what a great Pinot should be. So whole berry into the tank on the 115 and on the Pomard clone that's on this as well. And then the two other clones, I play a little bit with whole clusters. And why is that? Well, whole cluster, and for me, Pinot, like I just mentioned, a big part of it is the aromas. And the aromas, I think, is really what brings you in and gives you this really sensual, tactile experience, even when you taste it on your palate. You know, a lot of what you taste is actually aroma. And that translates into from your nose into your mouth and down your throat, and just really keeps you captivated and intrigued. And that's kind of what I'm looking for on the Pinots. So the other two clones, I'll do a variation of whole clusters. And before, a while ago, I did a pretty big study on my own here to try to figure out where the best location for the whole clusters is and what percentage of whole clusters to use in the tank. You know, because there's a lot of thought and science that goes behind all this. And of course, there's no right or wrong answer. It's just what you do as a winemaker. That's your feel that allows you to produce the wine in your style in the way that you want to do it. So me personally, I like to, for the most part, I go 30% whole clusters at the most, except in some cases I have a clone that I use in a different Pinot that we make where I do the entire thing 100% whole clusters, right? So for the most part in this Pinot, though, it's limited to 30% total whole clusters. And by that, I mean inside of the tank, there's the total amount of fruit that's in there is 30% of it will be whole clusters. So let's say that I have a clone 777, really fruity clone of Pinot Noir. There's 10 tons of it. Three of those tons would be whole cluster into the tank, non-destemmed. And we like it in the cellar because it really helps us out. It's a little bit faster to not have to destem and just dump it into the tank. But also an important factor about the whole clusters is where you position them in the tank. So believe it or not, if the clusters end up at the bottom of the tank, or the middle of the tank, or the top of the tank, you have different flavor effects in the wine. And so I don't do anything dogmatically, so I'm not going to say that I only do this. But depending on the vintage, I'll kind of play around and find different areas to do it. Or maybe I'll do my best to scatter it about the tank as we're filling it, throw a whole cluster in there, and see what happens later on. And like I said, the beauty of it is there's really no wrong answer, but you might find something that's really, really intriguing that year that you're not going to repeat the next vintage, that it's not just not going to happen that year. So we go to the tank. The way that we design our tanks in the winery is that they're all pretty much open top situation. And that basically means exactly how it sounds, that if this is the tank, there's a big opening on the top of the tank that we can also seal off. So not all red wines I do open top style, but that gives me the flexibility to do different things as we're fermenting the wine. So we'll fill the tank. We'll be in there for at least 4 days before we start the fermentation, maybe up to 10 days. And then once the yeast starts getting activated and it gets a little bit warmer, the fermentation takes off. And my goal with the Pinot, like I mentioned earlier, it likes to ferment overnight if it can. So I try to stretch it out as much as I can, maybe 10 days worth of fermentation, playing with the temperature just slightly every day, letting it get a little bit warmer and a little bit warmer, so that finally when we get to about 10% sugar left and we're starting with 25, I can just turn the cooling off and let the wine get to the temperature that I like, which is maximum temperature 88, 90 degrees, which is pretty hot. And it's important because as you're fermenting, you're kind of creating an environment for the yeast that's toxic. So, you know, the yeast doesn't like a lot of alcohol and doesn't like hot temperatures. It'll start dying and the fermentation will stop eventually if it's in a situation that makes the yeast not comfortable enough to continue doing its job. So it's kind of a fine line that we work there. But also on the other end of winemaking, the hotter it is and with the amount of alcohol that's in there, you start getting more extraction into the wine as you go along, as you start producing more alcohol in your fermentation. As your temperature starts going up, you start pulling in other flavors. So initially, when it's cold fermentation, cold maceration, no fermentation, I'm focusing on getting as much fruit character and aromatics into the wine. And then as we start fermenting, I slowly start trying to pull in some of the structure and some of the stuff that's more, for lack of a better term, harsh in the wine, the tannin and things like that, and the polyphenols into the wine. All at the same time, trying to get the wine color into the wine as much as possible. And that's something that happens early on for me, too. People are amazed a lot of times when they come and they see my juices that, you know, after 24 hours in the tank, they already look like this, which is pretty remarkable for a Pinot being a varietal that normally doesn't have a lot of color. So back to the open tops then. The tanks are full. We start working them. And the magic of the open tops for Pinot is we can go to the top of the tank. Pinot is a varietal that doesn't like a lot of air. And so I do my best to not expose the wine to a lot of air during the course of fermentation, nor during the course of aging. In fact, when we get to the barrel, I don't really like to move the wine out of the barrel until we're going to bottle. So anyway, the open top then, in this case, just to explain the extraction techniques that you can use when you're making red wine, there's basically three things that I use, and it's the same things that most people use. It's just the frequency and the duration of each that changes depending on the winemaker and what they're tasting. And so the main thing that people do is what's called a pump over, and it's basically that. So if you imagine this to be the tank, there's a couple of valves towards the middle bottom of the tank where you dry out the juice. And what's happening as it starts fermenting is, keep in mind that the grapes are actually in the tank, right? And they're slowly releasing juice over time based on their own weight. They start releasing the juice, and based on the fermentation starting to go, the skin's breaking down, the juice starts coming out. And so what happens is the fermentation gets going then, the carbon dioxide that's being produced in the fermentation allows all the solids that are in there to come together in what we call a cap. And so that cap starts floating to the top because of the CO2. But guess what? In that cap is where all of the flavor basically is, and you got the juice down here. So our goal during this fermentation period is not only to ferment the wine and convert the sugar to alcohol, is to try to get as much flavor into the liquid. And we can only do that if we can steep, basically kind of like making tea, the solids, the cap, into the juice. And so the techniques that we use then is we can either circulate the liquid from the bottom of the tank to the top using a pump. And this technique, as I mentioned, is called a pump over. And you basically, for a period of time, depending on how long you want to go and you're tasting it, you know, you just set up a circulation here where you're taking out from the bottom, it's going over the top. And then on the top, we have like an irrigator that's kind of spreading the juice out all throughout the top of the cap. And that's kind of sinking down and going through the cap back into the juice. And as it's doing that, it's pulling flavor out of the solids that are in there. The other technique that I use primarily on Syrah, but I'll use it in other varietals when needed, is what's called a delestage, or some people call it a rack and return. And that basically involves emptying out the entire liquid that's in there all at once into another tank. And then you let the cap fall to the bottom of the tank, and that'll ferment on its own. And you can, you know, leave it for a little while if you want to, or you can return the liquid back as soon as you want. So this gives us a chance to be creative and just play around. And, you know, you have an idea of what's going to happen, but you don't really know until it actually happens, because every year is different. So, you know, the juice is over here. The cap is here. Maybe one day I'll decide, depending on where the fermentation is, I'm going to return all the juice over the top using the irrigator, kind of nice and slow. Or maybe later on, I'm just going to return it through that same valve I took it out and just kind of let everything kind of rise back up to the top. So that's the delestage. And the delestage, what it does for me, it helps aerate the wine. So at certain times when the yeast is looking for a little bit of help with the air, I kind of like using that method. And the pump over does some aeration as well. But it really brings out the middle body of the wine and gives you density and just gives you more fruitiness on that mid palate. The third method that I use is more common to Pinot Noir winemaking, but people have started using it in other varietals as well. And it's called a pigeage in French, or it's basically stepping on, or a punch down is what we call it here. So again, the solid parts of the grapes rise to the top. And again, we're trying to figure out a way to get that in contact with the juice. So basically what we do is, and this is where the open top tanks are important, we stand on the top of the tank, and with a plunger type device, we just push gently the cap back into the juice, right? All that we do, go all the way around, and people do different things. They go around the clock. You find ways to be, have fun with it, go around the clock, go counterclockwise, write letters, symbols, whatever, so that everything by the time that you're finished has been has gone into the, submersed into the juice, into the liquid, so you can continue to get flavor going into that. And so these different things that I'm doing will depend a lot on what I'm tasting. So I'll taste the wines 3 or 4 times a day, of course, before any of these operations, and again after and during, just to see what's going on and to maybe change things up, you know, because maybe, you know, I'm not getting what I want, so I'm going to do, instead of 2 punch downs a day, I'm going to beef it up to 4, or maybe the punch down's not giving me enough, so I'm going to do more delissage and things like that. And those are all things, they're not recipes. It's all based on how things are tasting and what the results are as we're making the wine. So that's really, really important to say. It's very intense what we do during that time of the year, so that we don't have to go back and mess with it later on. You know, once the wine hits the barrel and once the wine's getting ready for bottling, I don't really like to go back and say, well, you know, I wish I had done that, or I wish I had done this. I like to try to get it as right as I can, knowing that it's a natural product and that it's going to change over time in the barrel early on. So we do this fermentation process, and like I said, that'll last 7 to 10 days. And after that, we'll do a little bit of a warm maceration period. So again, Pinot is not a variety that has a lot of fruit and structure and things like that. So what I'm trying to do is be really careful not to extract bitter flavors into the wine, because like I said a minute ago, I don't want to go back 8-12 months later and realize that the wine is bitter because I did too much work on it. So now I have to add something to take out the bitterness, you know. So I'm being really careful tasting it so much, so that when I start detecting that it might be getting bitter, I can move the wine off the cap, off the skins, and separate it out in time so that I don't get any of that transferred into the wine. So normally the fermentation, 7-10 days, warm maceration period, maybe 4 to 5, depending on the way things are tasting. So at the end of the day, it spends between the cold maceration, the fermentation, and the warm maceration, 20 to maximum 25 days in the tank. And then when that time is up, based on taste, we'll drain and press. So we'll send the juice to another tank, separate it out, and we call that the free run. And then we'll go into the tank. The solids will fall to the bottom of the tank, of course. And we'll go into the tank. We'll shovel that out into a bin. and then we'll take that to the press and then squeeze out the last bit of juice that's in there. And a lot of times that juice that's held in the cap is really concentrated and really astringent and tannic. And it could represent up to 15% of the total wine. So it's a sizable amount that, you know, we definitely don't want to throw away. But what I'll do is I'll keep it separate in different barrels and let it age on its own so that I can evaluate it over time and see if I want to use it all or some of it, or maybe it needs a different barrel treatment to give me the flavors that I want if it's too astringent. So that in, at the end of the aging process, I can blend everything together and use it and not have to throw anything out. So we'll go to the barrels, we'll do the pressing, it'll go to the tank, I'll do a series of analysis to see where we're at. And then I have a barrel regime already selected that I've basically decided that I'm gonna follow based on how it was tasting in the tanks. I select my barrels and then I decide to go to barrels. So for the most part, this goes to about 75% new barrels. And anytime I use wood in the winery, it's always French oak. So it goes into 75% new French oak barrels. And for me, that does a lot to bring a little bit more creaminess and elegance to the wine when it's that high in oak. I'm not looking for oaky flavors. I'm not looking for vanilla or butterscotch, but I'm looking for some spiciness and just to give it some overall complexity to the wine. So again, I go back to the sensual word that I used at the beginning. That's kind of what I'm looking for, is that when you smell it, when you taste it, there's a sensuality in the Pinot that's pretty clear that that's what this wine is about. So 75% new oak. I use a different a variety of, for Pinot specifically, just two different barrel producers or coopers. And then within those two coopers, a couple of different toast levels and a couple different grain selections to help me achieve the complexity that I'm looking for. So after that, we do the secondary fermentation, which is the malolactic. So the bacteria converting malic acid to lactic acid in the barrel and softening the wine by reducing the acidity or changing the acidity from one type of acid to another. And that could take a couple of weeks, even a month, for that to complete. And then once that's over, pretty much it's done. So we'll put the hard bung into the barrel. We'll seal it up. And then we'll taste it every month, every couple of weeks to see how it's doing and just kind of let it age. And for this particular Pinot, it's 12 months in oak. And basically 2 months before bottling, we typically bottle this in August of the following year. So if it's 2018, it would have been bottled in August of 2019. And then we let it sit in bottle for a little while before we release it. So it continues to evolve and continues to age under the cork, which is also coming from a tree and which also breathes like a barrel. So it allows the wine to continue to change and grow as it's in the bottle. And so that's basically the winemaking. Now we can taste it and we can see, you know, that this wine, what I will say about this wine and in general, the wines that we make here at Mira is because of this attention that I put on the wines when we're making it and this really gentle approach to aeration during the winemaking process, these wines take a little bit of time to open when you first open them because it hasn't been exposed to that much air. And that's one of the reasons I think the Burgundy glass, the Pinot glass, is really important to this wine because it allows the wine to get some aeration and start opening up a little bit sooner than it would maybe in a different type of glass, right? This allows, it's got a bigger opening and you can swish it. It's got a bigger bowl so that you can move it around and kind of start letting it open up. But what you'll find for those of you that do have wine left over at the end of the night, when you go back to it the next day or even 2 or 3 days later, the wine is just much more open, but still fresh. It doesn't taste like it's aged, which is one of the things that I'm really proud of the wines that we make here. That, you know, I took home 3 or 4 bottles of wine the other day to just to get a feel for how they were tasting. And I drank those over the week that I had those open. And it was just astonishing to me that even the Chardonnay, 5, 6 days after it was open and just sitting on the countertop in my house, was still showing a lot of freshness, but was just a lot more open and maybe a little bit more opulent than it was when it was first open. So don't be afraid to let your wines, of course, if it's the right temperature on your shelf, just kind of sit there and continue to open up as they sit there for a little bit, you know, because they haven't been exposed to that much air. So anyway, back to the taste. When we get into this, I think the first thing that you'll find is the aromas. And I talked about the whole cluster use to help me really draw out some more interesting character and aromas into the wine. And what does that smell like, the whole clusters? When we're fermenting, there's a really strong blueberry type character in the cellar and the tanks that have that have whole clusters in them, even if it's only 20 or 30% of whole clusters, they release just a lot of aroma, even just in the cellar. And so when you taste the wine, that's one of the things that you pick up. What I'm picking up in this wine today as well is there's some eucalyptus trees planted not too far from where the vineyard is. And sometimes when it's windy, the wind will carry the leaves over to where the vineyard is. And so when the leaves touch the grapes, you get a little bit of the oil from the eucalyptus onto the grapes, and that comes into the wine too. So I get a little bit of eucalyptus on this wine today, along with the fruit, the components in there. But for the most part, it's a wine that's got really nice aroma, that's got a lot going on. So it's difficult to pinpoint any one thing. And that's one of the things that I really like, is that it's not so obvious that it's, blackberries or cherries or blueberries. There's this, but maybe there's that, and there's also a little bit of that. And that's kind of what I look for in general with the wines that I'm making here. So you smell it, and one of the hallmarks for me of a great Pinot is that you do spend a lot of time just smelling it and trying to understand the wine just from the nose alone, and that it's really captivating you to smell, and then finally you taste it. And so when you taste it now, this wine has had plenty of time to age in the bottle. So this is a 16, and so bottled in 17. So it's had about 3 years in the bottle. So it's tasting pretty much hitting all the cylinders right now. The acid is not poking out. Everything is where it needs to be. And it's a really elegant and pleasurable experience when you drink it. It makes the wine is a little bit savory. It makes you want to go back for more and taste it again. And what you find is that the aromas that you have in the nose become a little bit more powerful now on your palate when you drink it, and the return that you get after you've already swallowed it and how long it stays on your palate is really remarkable, I would say, for a wine that's been in bottle for this long. And of course, in California, we're not used to aging wines that long. And I think it's a mistake, but we'll work on that. And hopefully when you guys get the chance to taste this wine and see for yourselves, you'll see the same thing that I do, and maybe a little bit more. So hopefully in a couple of weeks, you guys can have some wine and we can taste this all together, and we'll have more conversations about it. So that's basically in a nutshell what this wine is. Now I'm going to take a look and see, hopefully I've got some questions from you, and we can answer those. All right. So John from Michigan, as a winemaker, how would you describe making wine from growers like Stanley Ranch or Hyde versus making wine from the vines you control at Mira? Okay, so that's a really, really good question. It's a great question because, one, most of the growers in the valley, and I would say just in general, don't make their own wine. They grow grapes and they sell the grapes to winemakers or wineries to make wine from. And so the way it works for us, and of course, there's spot purchases that people do, take advantage of opportunities in the vintage. If there's fruit left over, people buy it just for that year. But for the most part, the way wineries and vineyards work together, or grape growers work together, is you have a contract for a specific parcel in the vineyard. So like the different clones that I have from this that go into this Pinot, I get that same area of vineyard every single year. And I basically manage how the grapes are grown together with the grape grower, of course. But the next grapes that are over for me is John Doe making his wine, and he might have a different approach, and the grower will grow the grapes according to how that person wants their grapes to be grown as well. So it's basically like we own the vineyard. It's a 2-year evergreen basically, but it works like a lease, and every 2 years it renews on its own. And we have all of the say on how we want to grow the grapes, when we want to pick the grapes, if we want to make any changes to how they're growing the grapes, the irrigation and things like that. We have a say in all that, just like we would with our own internal vineyards. So the only difference is, the growers that I work with are really top-end growers, and I don't have to worry too much about the management of the vineyard because they already know exactly what they're doing, and that's why they're kind of renowned for the grapes that they have. So it's a really good question. Just to summarize, the vineyards are treated like they're ours, and we always get the same section of the vineyard year in, year out, which is really important for me for consistency. Cause if I had a, just to exaggerate, 100-acre parcel of Pinot that had 1 year was from over here and another year was from over there, that presents a challenge that I don't really want to have, because it's a lot more work than it is really required. All right. So again, from John, I would love to know that you have a brand new state-of-the-art winemaking facility. How will that change the way you make wine? And as an end customer, could we notice any difference in future vintages? Now, that's a great question too. So we finally opened our winery last year, right around Labor Day, just in time to receive the Pinot harvest. And I would say more so than the vineyards, having our own winery is huge, because having the ability to taste the wines and act on them immediately when something is up is huge, just to have that possibility. So the level of control that I have in the winemaking process has become exponentially greater than how we were doing it before. You know, before, when we weren't as big and we were custom crushing, and we're still not that big, you know, we still only make about 6,000 cases, but when we're in a situation where we're using a custom crush facility to make the wine, you really had to anticipate what you were going to do, and you couldn't necessarily react right on the spot to do anything, because you had to get in line behind the other people that were in front of you that had already asked for work to be done. So now that we can just be here all the time, tasting the wines as often as we want and making the changes on the spot, I think it's going to be huge for the quality of the wines that are going to be made in the future. So I think already beginning with the wines from last year, if the wines are already pretty good from before with custom crush situation, the wines from 2019 from the first production of the winery are going to be that much better in going into the future and beyond, you know. That's a good question. I'm glad you asked me that. Let's see if I got any more questions here. From Tom. Thank you, Gustavo. Just like yesterday, I'm sipping a mirror wine, but not same vintage. How would you compare and contrast the 2016 Stanley versus the 2014 Hyde Pinots? Okay, so that's a really good question, right? We make a couple different Pinots. One comes from the Stanley Ranch, and one comes from the Hyde Vineyard. So the Hyde Vineyard Pinot is 100% single clone, and it's one clone of Pinot that basically does everything that these four clones are doing on their own. This one clone is doing it by itself. So the difference is you get a lot more complexity from this other clone called Calera in the case of the Hyde Vineyard Pinot, and you produce a much more powerful, more big, juicy kind of Pinot than you do with the clones that I have from Stanley Ranch. So what ends up happening is on that wine, I almost treat it more like a Cabernet because the grapes just have so much stuff going on. I don't do any of the whole clusters in that wine. I destem it all, but you know, the rest of the approach in the winemaking is similar, but I try to draw out like all these other bigger characters that are in the wine. And then I try to tame it down a little bit during the aging. So where the Stanley Pinot sees 12 months in 75% new oak, the Hyde Pinot sees about 24 to 26 months in 100% new oak, a lot more time, because that wine just has so much more going on. And not to get more oak onto the wine, but it's just really to try to placate a little bit all of these huge flavor components and aroma components that are on that wine, but also try to tame it down and give it some complexity with the oak. And that wine, you're drinking a 2014. That's our current release on that wine. It's had a long time in the barrel. It's had a long time in the bottle. It takes a while for that wine to really come into its own and really become what I think it is for tasting. So, you know, 2 years in the barrel and at least 2 years in the bottle before you start drinking it. So it's a much more powerful wine than the Stanley Ranch, a much bigger wine with a much bigger pedigree, the Hyde Vineyard Pinot Noir. Let's see if I have any more questions there. Hopefully that answered that one. That's a really good question to distinguish. All right, that's it for the questions. Unless somebody can come up with anything really quick. I really appreciate you guys taking the time to follow me on the Stanley Ranch Pinot tasting. I invite you guys to help us help other people with the SIP Mirror program. You can find out details about that on our website. And I look forward to hopefully seeing all you guys again tomorrow when I do the 2011 Cabernet Sauvignon, which is a pretty interesting animal in and of itself. So thanks a lot for joining me. I hope you guys have an excellent Thursday evening, and hopefully I'll see you guys tomorrow. Take care.